I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday afternoon. And we have all things political. We always have this on Mondays at 1 o'clock here on the Ideas Network. Mr. Bob Franken will be joining us this hour. He's been with us several times before. Veteran news journalist in Washington will tell you more about his background. He's also a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, going to the Final Four again this year. Exciting basketball over the weekend. We have a lot to talk about. We'll start with Indiana, where Governor Mike Pence of Indiana over the weekend said he would seek legislation to clarify the intent of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. He rejected assertions that it sanctioned discrimination against gays and lesbians. There have been a number of businesses and states now, including Connecticut, just the governor just announcing that this afternoon he will sign legislation that will not allow state money to be going to the state of Indiana if there are staff people attending meetings there or whatever. We'll look at that issue. We talked a wee bit last week about mandatory voting, and lo and behold, Bob Franken's latest column is on mandatory voting. He talks about how dismal it is that only 37% of people actually voted in the 2014 midterms. But he says making it mandatory is not only unconstitutional, it's really dopey. We will talk about that. The New York Times front page today has a big story on Bush and Walker pointing the GOP to contrary paths. The two men offer different messages, pursuing very different electoral strategies, and their political approaches seem inextricably linked to their biographies. We will talk about that this hour as well. And we will look at some New Year predictions that Bob made on January 2nd, and we'll see how accurate they are a few months later. Welcoming phone calls, as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Bob Franken is a veteran news journalist in Washington. He's worked for CBS, for CNN. He's a frequent guest on MSNBC. He has a weekly column, Franken Sense Blog, which is syndicated by King Features to U.S. newspapers. He covered combat in both Iraq wars, covered the White House during the George W. Bush administration, the Clinton administration. He has covered the Supreme Court, Congress, and has done extensive reporting on Guantanamo. And we always consider it a pleasure to have him on the program. Hello, Bob.
Hello. Good to talk to you again.
And thank you very much for being with us again.
Did I hear you say that you're going to hold me to account for my predictions?
Yeah, I found them. But don't worry, we'll do it at the end.
No. part of the advantage of being a pundit, or even a pundit wannabe like me, is that you do not have to be held accountable for anything you say.
Okay. But you were pretty much right on with many of them, so we'll just say that, and we'll talk about it a little bit later. Did you grow up in Wisconsin?
I did not. I grew up in Arkansas and ended up going to the university. Let me put it this way. I escaped from Arkansas.
Okay, and came to Wisconsin and started radio, your radio career, TV later, but radio in Marshfield, that's right?
In Marshfield, Wisconsin,
isn't
yeah.
that something?
Yeah, they don't like me to talk about that.
Well, it's fine. We'll talk about it here in Wisconsin, but let's start with Indiana, if you don't mind, where the governor seems to have not realized that he was going to get a lot of people upset about this bill that he passed, and now he's trying to figure out how to walk it back in some way. We've had businesses say, you know, we don't want to do business. We've had states now say we're not going to send state money to Indiana. What is this bill, and why is he signing it now?
Well, it's the religious objection bill, and it is a movement by the what I call the religious fanatics, to be perfectly honest about it, they need to be able to, this is the reading of people who are not favorable to it, need to be able to discriminate in the name of religion. That is to say that people can use their religious conscience to refuse to have commerce with gays. Now, you know, this is the kind of thing that in a different context was was addressed during the Public Accommodations Act,
right,
when we were talking about race. But now you have states, and Indiana is not the first, who have come up with this rationale for discrimination.
Well, didn't we a long time ago say that everybody had to be at the lunch counter?
Yes, now they've come up with a rationale that seems to be politically palatable. I should point out that a religious objection bill is nothing new, but Indiana in this day and age has decided, because of the fact that it's a very conservative state, and because there is still such antagonism toward gays, that they're going to come up with this contrivance of a religious objection to refuse service and other services to gays.
And do you think he was genuinely surprised by the amount of opposition he's received, Bob?
Well, I think that he might have been surprised by the fact that, you know, the world pretty much exploded around him. But I also think that he's being disingenuous when he says, oh, no, this is not just a rationale to discriminate. This is purely about religion. Of course it's not.
Right. He was asked, I guess, on ABC or someplace yesterday, in many of the states that have similar laws, sexual orientation is protected under civil rights law. It's not in Indiana. He was asked if he would seek those protections. He said, that's not on my agenda.
Well, no. And that, of course, is an important thing. Civil rights laws have attached to them protected classes of minorities, women, etc. But in Indiana and in many other places, protection does not extend to people who have alternative lifestyles.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think would happen? Not that this is going to happen, but I'm just sort of imagining for a moment what would happen if the NCAA said, sorry, Final Four, we're moving it a week later into another city.
Well, that's logistically impossible, but I think that there's going to have to be a pressure on the NCAA to relocate and not, until this law goes away, not have any sort of relationship with the state of Indiana. And that, of course, is what's happening with various government bodies and various corporations. Angie's List comes to mind, who are saying, no, this is too objectionable. We cannot have a relationship with you.
And what's interesting is the country is moving in another direction, or at least it is in many states.
Well, it is moving in another direction. Of course, in the case of Indiana, a judge has already ruled that the ban against same-sex marriage is unconstitutional. They're basically waiting for the Supreme Court to act. But all the religious conservatives, the hardliners, are horrified by this, and they're doing anything they can. Mm. And then you have states like Indiana where the politicians pander to these people and their bigotry.
Mm-hmm. New York Times had an interesting piece today, and you've written about Scott Walker quite a bit and Jeb Bush. It's the front page story. Bush and Walker point GOP to contrary paths. Do you see them as contrary paths, that they have a different way of getting to the nomination? Do you see them as very different kinds of candidates?
Well, I think that Jeb Bush stands out as the single Republican candidate who is putting some muscle behind the concept of attracting people from the outside. And the contrast was made with Scott Walker, who is trying to appeal to the internal base. And so that was the point they were making. But to be perfectly honest, had I written the piece, I would have probably said that Jeb Bush stands out as the single Republican wannabe who is trying to do that, to make the Republican Party more inclusive.
And does the Republican Party, Bob, need to be more inclusive to start winning elections? Or can, as the article suggests, Scott Walker really get more white male votes and secure the nomination that way?
Well, again, you ask the important question, which is about the nomination. The truth of the matter is that probably within the Republican Party, the way to achieve the nomination is to, in fact, appeal to the base. The problem is, what about the general election?
What about the general election?
Well, Jeb Bush makes the point that, hey, folks, not only do we have to choose a candidate, but we have to win in the general election. And if you're antagonizing so many demographic groups that are growing by leaps and bounds in this country, the Republican Party is eventually going to become an anachronism.
What does Jeb Bush think about unions?
He's not in love with unions, but he's not as fanatic as Scott Walker. I mean, Scott Walker has built a career. You were talking about reading some of my columns about him. He has built a career within the Republican Party by appealing to one of their fundamental instincts, which is to oppose labor organizations.
And why does that play so well among many Republicans?
Well, the Republican Party's main political enemy when it comes to donations and that kind of thing is organized labor. Beyond that, there is just a fundamental belief in the Republican Party that labor unions are bad for the country. The labor unions, of course, are very democratic, and that's how the split has gone in this country. So when Scott Walker comes in and is able to beat down the labor unions that he's done in Wisconsin, then Republicans are going to rejoice throughout the land.
Mm. Well, I'm sorry I'm doing it earlier than I said I would. New Year's predictions, your column January 2nd, you start with the line, Hillary is a lock.
I think what I was talking about is Hillary is a lock for the nomination.
Mm-hmm.
And I still believe that to be true, but as we both know, she has certainly stumbled a lot. The problem is that the Democrats don't have any bench.
What about Elizabeth Warren? You write about her. Will she announce?
Well, I think that she's the darling of the extreme progressives, but I think there's a belief in this country that strident Democrats are no better than strident Republicans.
And Martin O'Malley, who also is thinking he may enter, said over the weekend, speaking out against the possibility, and we've talked about this on the show several times, of a dynastic rematch between Mrs. Clinton and Jeb Bush, promoting himself as an alternative to that. It is pretty unbelievable, isn't it, Bob, that we could see another Clinton-Bush ticket?
Well, you know, I've felt this many, many times, which is, you know, we have, what, 320 million people in this country?
Right, I know.
You know.
I know.
You know, surely we can come up with somebody who's not named Bush or Clinton to run against one another.
But
I think that is among the things that is really turning people off.
Yeah. Well, why is it that that's who we come up with? What's at play?
Well, I think that the politics have become so distasteful to so many people that you don't really have a wide variety of people participating in the process now as office seekers. So I think that you really sort of have this field that doesn't change from one time to the next. But who would have thought that the Clintons, who were oftentimes likened to the Beverly Hillbillies when they first came to Washington, that the Clintons would be now part of an attempted dynasty.
Well, let's talk about your interesting column on mandatory voting. You say that the president was mulling an idea out loud. But you say that we have a participation problem, which we really do. But making voting mandatory would not only be unconstitutional, it's also really dopey. Why is it unconstitutional? Why is it dopey?
Well, you picked up on my elegant language.
I liked it. I liked it.
But beyond that, first of all, you know, there's nothing in the Constitution requiring you to vote. And I suspect that that somebody would go to court very quickly and say, no, we can't have this. We can't be required to vote to participate, which brings us to part two. Oftentimes, if not usually, elections are really Hobson's choices, where you're picking between Tweedledee and Tweedledum, or probably more likely Tweedledee and Tweedledum and Tweedledumber. Most people, a lot of people, don't vote because they're really voting no. So if you're going to have anything where you are expected to vote, I think that no should be on the ballot in some form. None of the above, for instance, which is what they have in Nevada. And now comes the proposal, well, what if none of the above wins? And then the two proposals are, well, you go for the second best to declare a winner, or you keep running the election until somebody besides none of the above wins. The problem is that you'd never elect an office holder with that.
Isn't that a fascinating thought, that none of the above would win?
Well, I think, quite frankly, none of the above would usually win.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, look at the approval ratings of politicians. Look at the approval ratings of those who've been elected. And it's really right down there, probably down there pretty much with TV reporters.
But they're climbing, right?
Pardon?
They're climbing. Their approval ratings are going up.
Who,
TV
reporters? They can't go down.
Right. Bob Franken is our guest this hour, and it's all things political, and we're welcoming phone calls. We started with Indiana, and a lot of businesses are now saying that they're very upset about what Indiana is doing, and they're not expanding their business. We have the mayor, I believe, of Seattle saying that no state money will go to any state employees who are doing, you know, conferences or anything. The governor of Connecticut is going to be saying the same thing, signing a similar bill this afternoon. Salesforce.com halting all corporate travel to Indiana. The CEO of Angie's List is abandoning a deal within Indiana to expand its headquarters. Charles Barkley saying this isn't going to happen, that the NCAA should move their basketball tournament from Indianapolis. He's getting a lot of negative comments and response to this bill that was signed. What do you think of it? What do you think about, you know, we can talk a little bit more about mandatory voting, but I don't want to have that be the discussion for the whole hour. We'll reserve that for another time. But it is pretty interesting. And Bob's column says it's unconstitutional and it's really not a very good idea. Do you think it's true that none of the above would win? We've talked about this before. What if it's another Bush-Clinton ticket? Would you agree with the former governor of Maryland, Martin O'Malley, that it's a dynastic rematch and there's something wrong with that? Well, those are just a few of the things we've already discussed, and we have plenty more to talk about, and we welcome your phone calls. Lines are open for you right now, and the number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number, join our conversation for all things political, 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Bob Franken is our guest. We are talking about a number of issues all over the news this weekend. Governor Mike Spence signing of this Religious Freedom Restoration Act, saying that it did not mean discrimination against gays and lesbians, but he's supposed to be putting together legislation clarifying the law to his General Assembly sometime this week, and did not offer any details. Should the state be boycotted? Should the NCAA be moved from Indianapolis because of this bill? Why do you see this bill being signed now? Does it keep him from further political aspirations, like running for president, or how do you explain it? And, well, we have a lot of other things to talk about as well. We're looking at Scott Walker and Jeb Bush, and they seem to be the two that everybody's talking about, including the New York Times today. We've discussed mandatory voting just a wee bit. Why is it that it does kind of look like a political dynasty, as O'Malley said, that Bushes and the Clintons being on the ticket probably in 2016, although maybe not. 800-486-8655, our number. Hour two of our program today, PBS has a really interesting documentary this Thursday, and it's on a quiet revolution that's happening in medicine, patient-centered care. The documentary filmmaker goes to Belfast, Maine, and a wonderful doctor who's doing community, he's lived in the same community and been a doctor there for 30 years and doing house calls and has a staff with a psychiatrist and physical therapist and a number of other health professionals. He goes to the Mississippi Delta, where the rates of diabetes are the highest in the country. He goes to Chinatown in San Francisco, where there's a really thriving alternative to nursing homes for elderly Chinese. And he goes to Alaska, where a whole new model of healthcare has been instituted for Native Americans, run by Native Americans. So it's really a great documentary. All right, let's go to phone calls. 800-486-8655, our number. Laura in Milwaukee is our first caller. Hi, Laura.
With these religious accommodation laws, how long do they, you know, it's on gays and lesbians now. How long do they go before they start going on racial grounds? Like, I have an Asian white family. We're mixed here. And how long would they keep families like ours out of establishments based on religious grounds, you know? It can go that far.
Yeah, Bob, what do you say?
Well, actually, back in the day, that is to say back in the 60s, the argument was made that there are religious reasons why blacks and whites should not mix, should not marry, should be refused accommodations, public accommodations, that kind of thing. So that was swept aside, and now we have the same argument being made again, and one can only hope that the Supreme Court is going to sweep those aside also.
Yeah, so what happens when the Supreme Court decides on same-sex marriage? What does that do to Indiana's law and 19 other states who have laws that aren't quite as tough, but similar laws?
Well, you know, that's an interesting concept. Obviously, if the Supreme Court rules that same-sex marriage must be allowed, that there is no constitutional reason for objecting to it, then comes the next question, whether religious objection laws can be, in fact, enforced. I suspect that that would take separate litigation, but one has to believe that in this day and time, it's only a matter of time so that the religious objection laws are declared unconstitutional.
Thanks, Laura, for your call. Gabriel in Milwaukee. Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm clearly against what's happening in Indiana, but part of me wonders if actually it would be better to have more businesses like those who just say out in the open, we are against certain kind of people, and they would quickly realize that it's bad business, I think, and also people could not become rich people on one side and then the other endorsing hatred and discrimination.
Bob, I think you can probably make some money even if you are discriminating.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact. But the question is, can they be allowed to discriminate?
Mm-hmm.
Let's take the issue of Chick-fil-A, for instance. You'll remember that one. And quite a controversy when the leader of the company said that he was against gay marriage. And there was an instance where many people who were pro-gay marriage were boycotting Chick-fil-A, and those who supported his point of view were coming. People can do that. If they want to stand on their principles, they can certainly do that. However, they cannot, in the United States of America, refuse service, and that is the difference.
Thanks, Gabriel, for your call. We go to Andy in Appleton. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I teach at a technical college, and I teach leadership. And so the age range of my students is probably 20 to maybe 40. A couple years back, we had a reelection of our second-term president. And I simply asked my class in leadership, and this is 30 students, what did you think of the inauguration? I didn't get any reaction. I got zero reaction. I got no response at all. So I said, did you hear what I asked? No response. And I thought, well, what's going on? No reaction. So finally I said, come on, you have to talk to me. And you know what they said?
No.
It doesn't matter.
Mm.
It doesn't matter. So, you know, back when I was young, we called it apathy. It's not apathy at all. What it is, it's disenfranchisement. It's a feeling that it's just a crock. It just doesn't matter. I'll take your response off the air.
Before you go, Andy, what would matter? What would matter to the students?
Well, I think as your guest so aptly put it, what happens is that the politic about it just allows people to say whatever they want to say to get elected.
Mm-hmm.
But then once they're elected, it's all different. And people just feel like they have no say. If I've ever seen a time, I mean, I lived through the 60s, and if I've ever seen a time where we're polarized or ripped apart politically, it's now.
Bob.
Well, you know, the really some interesting insights regarding the students in your class. First of all, it does matter. The reason it matters is that these people, when they go into office, they make laws, they come up with decisions on how they're going to enforce the law and how they're going to use the power that they've been elected to use. So it does matter. But if they're saying, oh, it doesn't matter whether I participate, you know, then you have to say, you know what, they have a point. Because money, for instance, talks so much in politics, money that is used pretty much determine who is going to be in office, and then the people who paid the money are expecting something in return. Yes, we do have a vote, but that is a vote where the issues have been so distorted by the expensive television ads and all the rest that can only be afforded if people cater to the people who have lots and lots of money. We have a system where the average American says, oh, it doesn't matter anymore. Besides which, as we've talked about at length, the choice is such a disgusting one that nobody particularly even feels like they're participating in a democracy anymore. And, of course, that contradicts our claim that we have a democracy.
Well, what you said and what Andy said is terribly sad, isn't it, Bob?
Well, absolutely it's sad. It's sad, and it should make us all very angry. But the people who are in power, the ones who could change things, like the Supreme Court and all the rest, are influenced by the money people. I mean, you have that Citizens United decision, for instance, which basically gutted any efforts to control campaign finance. That means that the people who have all the money can come in and they can propagandize people with their TV ads and the like to make sure that the people they want are the ones who are in power.
Mm-hmm. Do you see any chance of that happening through a constitutional amendment, through some means?
Well, first of all, the Constitution has a First Amendment, so it's very difficult to say you can't, in fact, put your money where your mouth is, so to speak, because people have a right to express their opinions and something. So you have that problem. As for a constitutional amendment, I am very leery of trying to achieve a constitutional amendment, because you're really opening a Pandora's box. There are many suggestions out there that it's time to call a constitutional convention in this country and address the entire Constitution. Well, the Constitution, at least on paper, is a beautiful document, and it protects against the tyranny of the majority, which is in a fundamental characteristic of the United States. You don't want to tamper with the Constitution. You just have to, in fact, call on the good instincts of the American people. It's the only way this country can work.
Thanks for the call, Andy. It was a good one. Jim in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. Well, first off, as a quick aside, there's no, it's not strident or extreme to ask that the EPA and the FDA enforce regulatory laws. The main thing I want to talk today about are those things from the past that might be interesting to people. Every Sunday in the Milwaukee Journal front page section, you can read Congress following the vote, and it's instructive as to how the Republicans act on this. Also in Sunday's Journal, remarried Catholics says killers and gays are the same, Cardinal Burke, the conservative Catholic. And finally, I wanted to talk about two cartoons which were drawn in 1996, which show how little the GOP has changed. The first one was in the Atlanta Constitution, and an elephant dressed up as a woman in underwear says, polluted lakes and rivers, toxic waste dumps, despoiling wetlands, filthy drinking water. And a guy labeled industry, has an industry button on his suit, says, is handing cash over and saying, God, I love it when you talk dirty to me. And the final cartoon was from a New Jersey paper. And there's a guy, an elephant marked GOP 96, and he says, corporate executives are making record profits while cutting thousands of jobs for average folks. And the psychologist says, good, you're getting in touch with your inner Democrat.
All right, would you agree the Republicans haven't changed very much? Agree with Jim's analysis? Bob?
Well, first of all, I am guessing that our caller is a Democrat. That's a wild guess, but I'm going to stick with it.
I think you're probably right.
Yeah, and you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Pardon the cliche. But I don't want to let the Democratic Party off of the hook. I mean, they have, through ineptitude, through participating themselves in, you know, scrambling for all the money that the corporate people have out mm-hmm. there, they have really dropped the ball, too. What we really have, there was a Nicholas von Hoffman years ago, who was a columnist and he appeared on 60 Minutes, mm-hmm. said at the time that the differences between the Democrats and Republican are not much greater than the differences between minor factions in the Communist Party. And I've always believed that in fact we have a capitalist party in this country. We have basically an oligarchy with very few choices when all is said and done.
Thank you, Jim, for your call. Tom in Burlington. Hi.
Wow, that's really something. I was going to talk about, I wonder, these negative ads, some countries, they disallow those negative ads and 30 days before the election. I wonder if the FCC, by an executive order, could possibly do that, and what the effect that does have on the disenfranchised voter. And we had a very low turnout here in our state. And poor Mary Burke, she was beaten up by Walker very, very badly. And I think that if she and her opponent had a Democratic primary, there would be more interest in it. And I think if maybe Hillary Clinton has a good opponent, it'll keep the interest up and keep the issues out there in front of the public.
Well, taking your last point, the Democrats, many of them, are worried about the fact that Hillary Clinton, to some degree, is imploding as a candidate. I mean, all of this about her emails and the poor way that she handled it and some other generally considered mistakes that she's made along the way make people worry that she could be the issue and that she could usher in a Republican president before all is said and done. The problem is, who do the Democrats have? They have a really miserable bench, to use the sports terminology. Speaking of sports, by the way, let us not leave this program, Kath, without talking about the Wisconsin win. Yes, they're going to win.
Do you think they're going to win? Really?
Oh, absolutely.
They really have a terrific team, don't they? I mean, these kids are just great.
Yeah, but just remember that. I have to apply the pundit rule. That is to say that I don't have to be held accountable for my prediction. But in my heart, I'm hoping that they're going to win. Of course, the big game is the one against Kentucky.
Yes.
At any rate, I know you didn't want to slide into a sports camp.
No, it's fine. It's fine. You know, I was listening to the BBC today, and they've started their elections, and I was wondering, we want to do a show on this because it's so interesting. We are talking about all these races, and it's so far in the future. They've got 45 days. They're going to spend $45 million, and that's it, probably not much more than that. Why can't we do that in this country? I mean, it's just ridiculous how far ahead we start talking about all of this.
Well, there is that, but to be perfectly honest about it, it's profitable. I mean, a lot of people make a lot of money doing this kind of thing. In addition to which, even when you're not having a formal race, basically you're always having a political race. I mean, what is Congress if nothing more than a campaign stop, where just about the only thing that matters is not the substance of any law, but what it means politically? Getting back to the point that our caller made just a moment ago about maybe exercising some control over negative ads, here's my question. Who determines what is a negative ad, number one? Number two, there's that pesky First Amendment again, which really limits what people can, the controls on what people can say. So that becomes a problem. I, too, share the opinion that negative ads are disgusting, but the final point is they work.
Thanks, Tom, for your call. Rod in Weyerhaeuser. Hi, Rod.
Thank you, Kathleen. I'm sorry. No, they should eliminate this archaic, stupid voting with the you know, when they started it had a good reason, but now everybody's mobile. They can vote on the I was going to say any of these younger kids that say it doesn't matter. You know, if somebody asks them and they say that, they should say, well, go to a nation where they don't have that right to vote. And then come back and see if they say the same thing. And one other question. I wonder what Teddy Roosevelt would say about today's the majority of today's Republican Party, because there are some good ones.
All right, Rod. Thanks. Bob.
Well, first of all, Teddy Roosevelt, with his antitrust views, would probably not be a Republican today, number one. And number two, the fact of the matter is that we do have the right to vote in this country, but for a lot of people, we don't have the incentive to vote anymore because of what those students said. It doesn't matter. And the sad fact is, to a large degree, it doesn't matter whether they participate or not. What does matter is the harm that can be done if the wrong people get into office.
Let's go. Thanks, Rod, for your call. Let's go to Tom in Wausau. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yes, Tom.
Good. Well, at 2 points, you were talking about Scott Walker and unions, and I was in a union. I saw what unions did in the educational realm in public schools. I paid a lot of dues over the years that I was there. I'm no longer there. And I never knew where any of that money went. And when I did ask, and I asked a few people, both within union leadership and without, the indication was that it went to the political party of the union's choice. And so I just would have to say that I agreed with Scott Walker. I think unions are anachronistic. I don't think the public should subsidize pensions for teachers and other public unions. Secondly, I in terms of Indiana, I've always believed that you cannot legislate morality. I don't know why this governor came out and said that it would be a great idea if these businesses acted as this particular legislative act proposes. We've had this before where, individual businesses have popped up over the country and they've boycotted, made the news, and then suffered the consequences. And now he's got a whole state that is in peril probably because of this. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call, Bob.
Well, you know, I take him at his word, Mike Pence at his word, that he didn't expect this kind of reaction. I don't think the state expected this kind of reaction because it was not the first to do this. However, it's a different day and time
right now.
And I think that he probably means it when he says he's surprised, but quite frankly, he shouldn't have been. And, of course, since he's somebody who's flirting with running for the presidency himself, I think he has to worry about that unless he's going to join the list of those, like Scott Walker, who are going to try and appeal to the Republicans' base, even though that base is dwindling. As for the unions, his point that he brought up, the unions were always the counterpoint to management. And management has always been decidedly Republican because that's where the management-friendly, corporate-friendly policies have been championed in the Republican Party. And the Democratic Party was always where organized labor found its home. So when he says that he's objecting to union dues to be used for Democratic politics, I think that that is a little bit short-sighted. However, I will also say, in fairness, that one of the reasons that the unions have suffered such a dwindling in numbers and one of the reasons that Scott Walker was so successful in Wisconsin is because the unions have become really quite inept and have not stayed up with the times.
Mm. Thanks very much for the call, Tom. We'll take more in a moment. Bob Franken is our guest for All Things Political today, and Bob is a veteran news journalist, TV and radio, worked for CBS, CNN. He's on MSNBC frequently. He has a blog, Frankincense, syndicated by King Features to U.S. newspapers. He's a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Worked, this is probably the only place he'll get this kind of intro, but his first job was at a radio station in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Something to be proud of. And he's covered both wars in Iraq. He spent about a month embedded with the Army. He has covered the George W. Bush administration, the Clinton administration, the Supreme Court, and many years covering Congress. And our phone number, did I give it to you? It's 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls. Judy, where are you, Judy?
Hello.
Hi, Judy.
It's called Marina on St. Croix. It's near Stillwater, Minnesota.
All right. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Oh, thank you so much for your show. I never miss it.
Great. Thanks.
So I believe that Elizabeth Warren is as middle of the road as you can get. She represents what America was before extremist Republicans moved the center away from our traditional equal Democratic government policies. So please, you know, let her singular candidacy have a chance. There's a lot of people on Democracy Now!, a lot of people sending her money. Boston Globe has endorsed her. I'm all for no more, what do you call it when we have kings and queens and oligarchy and Clintons and Bushes.
Right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Judy. Bob.
Probably the first and only time Elizabeth Warren has been called middle of the road, at least in today's context. This is a country that has decidedly shifted to the right, and quite frankly, one of the reasons that it did, one of the big moments came with the election of Bill Clinton. He ran and operated as a quote, moderate Democrat. Middle of the road himself and all that kind of thing. And those who were the progressives were sort of shoved off to the side. And that's where Elizabeth Warren is today. She's not considered to have much of a chance. She could get the nomination, but chances are she would be really beaten badly in a general election in much the same way that George McGovern was beaten.
And yet, don't you think she has this issue that would resonate among many Americans to get Wall Street money out of politics, that Wall Street has never been had to pay for our bailing them out some years ago, and that they have way, way too much power? Don't you think that resonates with a whole lot of people, Bob?
Well, I think it resonates until the distortions come out in the TV ads, and I guarantee you that Wall Street would spend whatever it took to see to it that an Elizabeth Warren did not get elected. Mm. Now, I'm not saying that what she espouses is not good for the country. I'm just saying that we now have a country that isn't really a full participatory democracy, and those who have the power would not want to give it up and would do whatever it took to keep her from becoming president and espousing the policies that she does.
Steve in Madison, hi.
Hi. Regarding lobbyists, I think Chuck Govala was running against Tommy Thompson and kind of shook down lobbyists and the DA in Madison, the current one. He's honest, and he had to put him in jail. In my estimation, lobbyists ruin both the what happens in the Senate and the House.
Bob.
Well, not only the Senate and the House, people would argue, but also in the regulatory agencies. After a law is passed, it then is implemented by a regulatory agency, which is crawling with lobbyists. The problem is, what do you do about that? And again, this is First Amendment Day on your program. the lobbyists' right to exist and to espouse the cause that they're espousing are guaranteed in the First Amendment. The problem is that they're expensive, and about the only people who can afford them are, I like to call the overarching organization, the National Association of Bad Guys, and they're just about the only ones who can afford the lobbyists.
Thanks very much for the call, Steve. 800-486-8655 is our number. Rick in Green Bay sends this email, wants to know if there's a difference between $1 billion in campaign spending versus $100 billion. Where is the cutoff that matters? In his opinion, if billionaires want to say something, should they be allowed?
Well, I revert to Amendment Number 1. their argument is that should be allowed, and the Supreme Court is taking the position that they should be allowed also to use whatever resources, in effect, whatever resources they want. By the way, the $100 billion that people are talking about is not an outlandish figure. You have a few people in this country, I'm not even going to name names because you could name them yourself, who are willing to spend whatever it takes to make sure that they elect their candidates, and we're largely talking about the candidates of the Republican Party.
Yeah. And another email, the Democratic Party, this is from Jane, has gone extremely far left, as evidenced by Elizabeth Warren. JFK would not recognize today's Democratic Party. It's gone so far left. He said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Today's Democratic Party has flip-flopped that. They want the country to do everything for us without asking for much in return.
And yet, those who support Elizabeth Warren and others in the progressive movement say that, in fact, the country has moved, if not to the middle, to the right. And that is one of the complaints that they have about Hillary Clinton, who they say is too cozy with Wall Street.
Doug in Menasha is next. Hi, Doug.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So, all this speak of all this talk about with money and politics and how money is free speech and now with the Citizens United corporations and whatnot having basically unlimited amounts of money they can contribute, I think it's important to remember that the whole First Amendment being an inalienable right, that basically stems from just existence, people existing and creating governments, etc., and the government's job to protect, not to grant rights. But the fact is, both money and corporations are both legal fictions that are not only created, but whose continual existence is completely dependent upon the government. So to say that these fictions that are the product of government action are somehow, equatable to an inalienable right, I think there's a certain, disconnect there, a certain disingenuity. I'd just like to point that out, for people that, do want to say that these things are, in fact, rights.
Bob?
Well, corporations are not legal fictions, as we know, as a matter of fact. Their lawyers make sure that they have wide legal rights. You'll remember during the last campaign when Mitt Romney got ridiculed for saying that corporations are people. And what the Supreme Court done is it's basically accepted that premise, saying that the corporations, in fact, are people. Now, he is right that the Constitution, particularly the Bill of Rights, puts limits on government. But I've always said that by putting those limits on government, they basically unleashed the power of the people. And, frankly, have unleashed those who are in power to pretty much do what they want in the name of the various protections in the Constitution.
Thank you, Doug. Markin in Duluth. Hi.
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 Listen, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I agree that we have an oligarchy system in this country. Would getting rid of the party system help to get rid of that money hold on the... public offices and politics?
It's an interesting question, but then you'd have various individuals who basically would be selling themselves to the highest bidder. I think that what the political parties do in this country is they provide a structure. Now, the question has often come up, should we have a third party, that kind of thing? That usually falls by the wayside.
Well, something has to happen to wake everybody up and have them involved in government. I mean, we have this democracy. We have this jewel on earth, supposedly. It's really, I'm back to this great sadness that nobody's involved. Something's got to happen, doesn't it?
Well, you say that something's got to happen. And that is the American optimism that I would expect from you. But we can't take that for granted. I mean, the fact of the matter is that people have been saying that for quite a while now, and nothing has happened. I have a favorite expression, cheer up, they said things could be worse, so I did, and sure enough, they are.
They are, right.
It seems to get worse and worse and worse. And the question is, yes, something has got to happen, but if it doesn't, then the United States may become history.
Mm. Let's go one more phone call. Sherry in Whitewater. Hi.
Hi.
Oh, Kathleen. I live in Whitewater.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to say that I agree that there is way too much money in politics, and we have to figure out some way to get it out. But I wanted to disagree with the guest, even though I agree with everything you're saying other than this, that the country has moved too far to the right. I think corporations have moved our government to the right, but I don't think the people have moved too far to the right.
Mm. Bob?
Well, I think that the corporations have pretty much created an apathy, and so they rule. I mean, if you think about it, that's what an oligarchy is. So the corporations have been successful in moving our government, certainly, and our laws to the right. What we normally define as the right.
All right, predictions for Kentucky, Wisconsin. Mine is Wisconsin by 2. Wisconsin will come from behind again the last 5 minutes of the game, and they will win by 2.
And I will remind you of that the next time that we're on together, Kathleen.
I know. I want to hear your prediction, Bob.
Well, my prediction is that Wisconsin is going to beat Kentucky.
Okay.
Then we'll beat Duke in the final.
All right. Great. All right. Big weekend ahead. Something to be happy about, Bob.
That's right. And if we said anything else, we'd be run out of town, wouldn't we?
I think you're right. Thank you so much for being with us. You're
Thank
on a
you,
roll
Kathy.
Today. Thanks, Bob. Bob Franken, our guest this hour, veteran news journalist in Washington. He is on MSNBC frequently, and he has a column, Frankincense. It's a blog syndicated by King Features, graduated from UW-Madison, and has covered the Bush administration, second Bush administration, the Clinton administration, Congress, the Supreme Court, and both Iraq wars. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour, and thanks to KP as well for on-air production in our studios here in downtown Milwaukee. We're going to be talking about doctors, hour 2.